Hello, you're listening to Santa Cruz Naturalist. I'm Nikki Schreeder, your host, and today I'm joined with Aspen Ellis, who is an expert in birds of all types, but in particular, those of the sea. Aspen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellently. I'm so excited to be here.
So Aspen, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into this world of seabird ecology?
That's a good question. So I actually initially was just really stoked on birds. When I was a teenager, I worked at a zoo where we had a huge number of cool bird species, and I was immediately hooked. But my first experience working with seabirds was when I got a cool opportunity to volunteer with Project Puffin in the Gulf of Maine. And being out in a seabird colony is just an experience like I've never had. It's like watching a nature documentary to me felt kind of fake before, but being out there, it was just so intense with all of the birds dive bombing you and just poop in your eyes and mouth. Really all in immersive experience.
So would you say actually being in the field was the nature documentary on steroids, or do you think the nature documentary only like picked, you know, the climax?
I think it was maybe the PG version of what it was actually like out there. But I was still hooked. It's really cool to be able to see sort of an entire breeding colony start to finish over the course of a breeding season. And I just feel like it's the most connected to nature I feel when I'm out there watching that happen and sort of being a part of the colony for several months.
That's awesome. I feel like as a scientist, it's so important to be able to feel that connection with what you study, and being out in the field is such a great way to do that. I also think seabirds are really cool because they exist in such different features of the natural world, from the sky to land masses to the ocean. What role do you think seabirds play in connecting these vastly different types of ecosystems?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really hooked me about seabird work, is that coming from a avian background generally, it was really cool to be able to use seabirds to get into this marine biology perspective, honestly, of the world. The idea that you have all of these questions about oceanography and forage fish ecology and how, for example, warming sea surface temperatures really affect seabirds and their diet and their success raising chicks. They just tie all of these questions together really nicely. And there's also a lot of human connections to seabirds. I think they're a very charismatic group, so a lot of people use them for ecotourism. There's large indigenous histories, especially in places like Alaska, around seabirds. So they're just a really great way to tie together a lot of the different things I'm interested in.
It's also quite amazing how much diversity you get with seabirds, from penguins. Are penguins technically seabirds?
They sure are. Seabirds is not actually a formal taxonomic group. It's more just based on behavior. So any bird that is
hanging out at sea.
Broadly at sea, yeah. And breeding on land.
Got it. So the work that you do, Aspen, is really important because you're focusing on seabird conservation. And you also have a long history of doing seabird work, other various different conservation strategies. What have you seen that seem to be successes or failures in the field? And do you have any thoughts on where the money should be going when it comes to seabird restoration?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I think that for me, one of the things that really hooked me about seabirds is that there are a lot of really effective management techniques that you can use, and you can really see the impact. So things like eradicating invasive species, island breeding colonies, are really well tested and work great at boosting seabird populations. And actually being able to be out there and enact that is hugely rewarding, I find, in work, to be able to have the research and the management both happening simultaneously. So a lot of those techniques, invasive species eradications, translocations to safer breeding sites, which is a really cool technique where you can actually kind of fake seabirds out into thinking that a new place is exciting and there's already a colony there, and then they'll get attracted to that new breeding location. And then also just restoring habitat at island breeding sites. It's this really great central place all of the seabirds use. So if you use conservation measures at that breeding site, it can be really impactful for the whole population.
So how do you trick a seabird into thinking a site is more exciting than it actually is?
Oh, you use fake wooden seabirds. You play seabird noises and you put mirrors up and they think, wow, what a hot spot to be.
It sounds like a musical.
Yeah, you could also take the chicks and put them there and that'll also work. You can hand raise them at the location and then they'll always come back. But yeah, it's a whole theater production.
And the work you're doing right now during your PhD at UC Santa Cruz is looking at the effects of offshore wind on seabirds.
Absolutely.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is a really exciting project for me to be engaged in because offshore wind is a really quickly developing industry globally, but also here on the Pacific. And what we're really interested in is finding ways to facilitate offshore wind energy development, because, of course, it's really important to have these renewable energy sources. But the scale of build out is so significant that we're a little bit concerned about what impacts might be to various wildlife, but seabirds especially, that are already a really threatened group of animals. So developing frameworks, essentially, for both studying the impact and then responding to the impact that can work both for developers and for seabird populations, such that both can coexist very happily, is where I'm focused.
So when you first told me about this project, in my head, I was like, why can't the seabirds just see the wind turbine, the massive blade of death, and then fly around it? But apparently they can't do that. Could you tell us a bit about why that is?
Yeah, so some species collision is a risk factor, so they could just hit into them. And if you think about it, realistically, when you're out there flying in a marine environment, there's very little that you would be adapted to collide with regularly. These are not birds that are used to navigating around giant obstacles. It's a ocean seascape. So that is certainly a concern, and there are some species that are more vulnerable to that than others. But even what you say about flying around, we know that some species do, and that actually could also be a concern, because what if we're establishing these facilities in places that are in the middle of migratory routes or that are important foraging areas, especially during the breeding season? That could really increase energy budgets, having to relocate your route every day or every season to and from to avoid these facilities.
It seems like a lot of this work is modeling based. How do you predict what you think these seabirds are going to do in response to having these wind turbines up? Do you look at like what terrestrial birds are doing with respect to windmills on land? Or how do you just predict what their behavior is going to be?
It's a really interesting question, and it's something that we're still very much working out. But you're right that it is a lot of modeling work. So you can look at things like distributions of seabirds, and you can predict how that might change under different ocean conditions as the climate warms, for example, to predict where they will be in relation to the wind turbines. We also know things about how vulnerable they might be to collision based on flight height and flight speed and the size of the bird and how all of those things mathematically will interact with the likelihood of them being in the same space as the turbine blade as they're transiting through these facilities. And then we also have new monitoring techniques that are being developed all of the time, things that can pick up the vibrations of a bird hitting a turbine blade to be able to test how often these collisions are actually happening. The upshot, though, is that it is going to be very difficult to get really refined estimates. So it's about building in frameworks where basically both developers and conservationists are happy with the amount of conservation work that's happening to compensate for any of this potential residual mortality.
It's also a really interesting problem because there are sort of benefits and costs and on both sides for both conservation groups. You have the renewable energy people who want to, you know, reduce the use of fossil fuels, and they have good intentions. And then you also have the seabird folks who are similarly passionate about those same matters but are looking at a different angle of things that maybe have been overlooked.
Absolutely. And I think that another important thing is that realistically, with the rate of climate change, we really need to get these facilities out there quickly. And we don't necessarily have the time to collect all of the data that we need to really know what the impact will be before it happens. So one thing that we're recommending, given that, is a impact offsetting approach, also known as compensatory mitigation, where instead of necessarily thinking that you're going to be able to prevent all impact from happening just by, for example, placing the facilities in areas that you think low impact might happen, recognizing that there will be some leftover impact even after you've taken all of those precautionary steps. So then building in a scheme into policy where some money will come out of these wind energy facilities that will actually enact the restoration actions I talked about earlier, like invasive species eradication at the breeding site. And that way, the developments can happen. We can keep doing the monitoring. But in the meantime, we're working on conservation actions and better funded conservation actions to boost seabird populations in the meantime.
Sounds a lot like carbon offsets, but for seabirds.
Exactly,
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's a biodiversity offsetting is sort of this globally interesting approach right now. And there's a lot of different debates about it. But it has the potential, we think, to work really well for seabirds.
Very cool. Well, it's awesome chatting with you, Aspen.
It's great to be here. I had a great time.
This was Santa Cruz Naturalist, and I'm your host, Nikki Schreiber.